It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And I honestly think...
Don't get onto internet rumors here, Si. This is a family show.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. My name's James. Welcome to another Planet FPL Clash of the Correspondents and the first of three COTC podcasts we'll be doing ahead of Game Week 22. And on this one, I've got the two correspondents who think they're the biggest players outside the Greedy Six. Cartel, as they're calling it. And yes, we will have a little chat about FFP later on the pod. Firstly, let me introduce you to our Aston Villa correspondent. He still thinks he's up challenging for the title. It's Lee Jackson. How are you, Lee?
Very good, thanks.
Good stuff. And our Newcastle United correspondent, Simon Bibby's in. He's opened up by the time Game Week 21 finishes. They're still in the top half. How are you, Si?
Yeah, good. Thanks, James. Good nice man. To meet you, Lee.
Yeah, likewise, sir.
Oh, isn't that nice? You just did this off camera. You don't have to do it again, lads. Lee, we last spoke ahead of this massive doubleheader you had with City and Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
You won them both. You must have got giddy as hell, mate.
I predicted us to beat City as well, if you remember, on COTC with Johnny.
And I think you might find so did I.
You did. You did.
Yeah. Think you beat that lot from South London as well, though. Sorry, said Gunnar, sorry.
No, like you say, giddy. It was a surreal week. And although the scores were the same, two very different games in terms of City, where we absolutely pummeled them and thoroughly deserved the victory, whereas Arsenal, more back to the walls, hanging on. But yeah, incredible results. And it took us to very nearly the top of the Premier League if we could have just beaten Sheffield United on that Friday night. But still a remarkable season. We're absolutely delighted with where we are. Got no European games for a bit now. Still in the FA Cup. Yeah, dreamland.
It is one league win in four, though.
Does it feel like it
doesn't quite feel like that, but does it almost feel like the opportunity's gone a little bit?
Yeah, it's funny that it feels like we've had a real dip in form. Mood has dropped a bit and we're third. It's still mind-blowing. But that just says, and I think it's a reflection of any football team, is how quickly expectations build. You put together a really good run, you beat two big teams, and suddenly everyone expects you to win every game. But yeah, when you take a step back, we're still in a great position. But yeah, form recently hasn't been good. And the common theme seems to be teams that sit in a low block that show us the respect of being a top four team now and say, well, what have you got? Come on then, break us down. Those are the teams we struggle against. If we look at the most recent game at Goodison, which finished 0-0, just couldn't get through them. Just couldn't create that, to quote Steven Gerrard, moment of magic to get through the defence and finish and score a goal. So, yeah.
To be fair, that's Unai Emery's first ever 0-0 in the Premier League.
Yeah. Yeah, mad.
It felt like watching that game on Sunday that you were always the more likely, but I never truly felt you'd win it at the same time.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It just felt like it was going to be one of those days where we'd create and create and create, but there wasn't that final killer pass or that shot that just gives the goalie no chance. Yeah, and it's felt like that in a few games this season. The Sheffield United game at home where we ended up drawing, the Mostar game in the Conference League, Bosnian team where they came and just sat really deep. And it wasn't until like the 94th minute that we managed to scrape a 1-0 win. So it's a common theme, actually, where we just struggle against low blocks, which hopefully Newcastle won't be if they come and try and play like they did at Villa Park last season and actually come out. We might stand a better chance than if they sit deep.
It's interesting you mention that because the last two games have been very differing. You got absolutely wiped away at Villa Park in April, 3-0, but you obviously walloped Leeds team 5-1 on the opening day. Are there lessons that we can take from those two games into this? Is it likely to be a more resolute Newcastle, or do you think you'll be open?
Oh, well, it's hard to say with how. I think there's definitely lessons to be learned, but I think even if you look at the opponents we've had this season, whether he's put those lessons and applied them is slightly different. It was definitely the biggest humbling we got last season at Villa Park. Like, we weren't outplayed like that, I think,
apart from anyone else, right?
Brighton, but like Villa was by far the biggest beat we got last season. We've had a few more this year, but it's interesting that the kind of journey that Villa are on this season, it's kind of mirrors what we were on last season in terms of results and the expectations, and then that slight dip, like even because we drew a lot of games last year. But yeah, so I took Villa for a good season to start, and I think, you know, they're kind of on track.
Four games you lost last year, Si. Is that right? Is it four?
Yeah, we drew 14, I think, last year or something like that. We're actually not that far off, to be honest, what we were last season. If we win after Villa, and we've all talked, something we talked previously about, we've got like a nice run that comes up starting at Luton at home. If we win that game, the Forest game, and I think it's Bournemouth, which ironically we've lost all three of those, the reverse fixtures this season, I think we'll be on the same points as we were at that stage last season. So it's interesting, the narratives that get spun out.
Well, here's another one, which is not a narrative, it's a fact. You've lost six of the last seven. That, I know it's been a tough run, but we've also had, it felt like it eased with like the Forest Luton game. Mm-hmm. Games, Robin, you lost both of them as well, and I think those are the two that caused the alarm bells, because it felt like you got into sort of late November, early December, and then the schedule and the injuries just suddenly became too much. It went from earlier in the season when you had a few problems, I felt like you was having sort of Saturday, Wednesday Champions League, Sunday league, it felt like it was working out, then you had that mad period where it was just like Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday. And it just went and on through the whole month, didn't it?
Played the same 11 every game as well. I know. Nuts. It's funny because you talked about it last season. I think it was one of the things that you flagged after our good start was whether we could keep that up, whether there'd be a dip. And actually, I think it was the same. I think it just happened 18 months later
than we thought it might.
And that's you know, credit to how the team, the conditioning, the mentality and everything. But it just reaches a point where, I know you said we're going to talk about FFP later, but you just can't run the same 11 players, even the goalkeeper, I know some of them are freak injuries, but you just can't run the same 11 players through that schedule of games and expect to, particularly the way that we play and how wants them to play it and come out on the other side in a good position. And I think, you know, by and large, the fans kind of recognise that.
Is there regret in hindsight that you didn't sacrifice something? Say, like the game at Tottenham, which was just before the AC Milan game. I mean, you played Everton the Thursday, you got well beat. You got well beat by my team on the Sunday, and it was obvious that you were knackered. Then there was Milan on the Wednesday. Did it feel like you should have sacrificed something in the middle there?
That's just not Howe's mentality, though. It's clear, like, now. So I think it's the first time that he's been in a position as a manager to have to go through this. And, you know, you could say at the moment it's not a strength of his in terms of squad management. I think there's potential mind games going on with the board in terms of him clearly stating that, you know, which players he has in his squad that he thinks are up to the challenge, and he just refuses to play the ones that aren't. It's hard to say when you're not in and amongst it. But there's definitely games where, you know, I've stopped throwing up predictions and things just because, you know, A, becomes pretty obvious that he's going to pick the same like 11 players, but B, like, some of the decisions were just like bonkers. I think
examples,
you just tell the players needed a break. Well, I think the Spurs game, I think Bournemouth as well was coming, like that was in and around some like key Champions League games, and you think there are certain players, like you could throw like Matt Ritchie into a game, he's not, Yeah, like Paul Dummett, you know, and even the Manchester United game in the League Cup where they went to Old Trafford, it was probably the only time that actually he thought, I'll rotate the squad. And they played really well. And like he didn't go back to that. And I thought like you might see that exact lineup with Paul playing left back, Dummett, Kraft, centre back. And this was at the time where I think Lascelles was potentially our only fit centre back. And there was question marks around Shaw every week. He just didn't do it. I think there's lessons to be learned, and I think he'll get till the end of the season. Not talking about transfers, but just the current squad, get to the end of the season. And if we're in the same situation next year and he's still ploughing through with the same players, I think it may be time for a change, because I don't know. I just don't think you can manage this way at the level we're trying to get to.
Well, people are going to start talking about it now because of the results, aren't they? And you know, a manager, whatever you think of him, like Mourinho, comes on the market, people will speculate, won't they?
Yeah,
yeah. So you know what? I think about him, I don't need to say anything.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I've seen like the usual like Talk Sport and all that bullshit talking about it. I don't know. I think if you actually polled every fan, maybe like 5% would think that he's the right man for it. But at the same time, everyone's complaining when we're trying to hold on to one goal leads. Or sitting too deep and defending, and you think, well, what's going to happen when Mourinho comes in? So I don't know. It's not for me. I don't think money wise we're in a position to fulfill the demands of a manager like that. I think we just need to stick with Howe, to be honest, until we're in a different place financially.
So you said maybe 5% would maybe take Mourinho or want at this moment in time. Yeah, but if you polled the fans in terms of would you just generally change the manager, what would the percentage be at the moment, do you think?
I think it would be higher. And then I think if you ask them, actually, who would you want to go get and replace Hal, they wouldn't know. And then, so it's two different questions.
Yeah.
I just think it would be mad. I think he's built up so much credit in the bank with the ownership, the fans and the players. I think ultimately, if the players are still playing for him, and even through that run where all the players were like knackered, you could tell they were still, you know, trying to win soft penalties, and it's just the fact that they were completely like run out.
Did you say cheat?
It was the Bournemouth game in the last 5 minutes where I think like Wilson like threw himself to the ground and stuff. If the players had like chucked it in and weren't trying to win matches for the manager, I don't think you see that. It's not necessarily
I've never thought through this fatigue or anything you've been suffering. I never thought for a moment you could look at a set of players saying I'm not playing for the manager. I just think they were out on their feet and didn't have a lot to go and lot to give. You know, even use the example of Lewis Miley coming in, who I know had like a good pre-season for you and quite impressed. He's a young boy, right? And he's ended up playing all these games consecutively. And he's built like a man, don't get me wrong, but he's still a young boy and he's ended up having to do it. And he's relying on him for like 90 minutes, Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday. Yeah, I think so, mate. But that's on Howe.
It is.
Because there's got to be some form of alternative solutions there.
Yeah, I think there is. I think he's a systems manager and he trusts certain players in certain positions and just won't. He's not flexible in that way. But I mean, Miley earned his spot and was playing really well. But even him, I think it's been too much in the last month. You can tell the last three or four games has been a dip in even in his performances. He got rested in the FA Cup against Sunderland, but now with this Joel Linton injury, which is a massive body blow for us.
Is that the worst player? I said that's the worst player you could have lost. Is that a fair comment?
Well, I think, yeah, in terms of injury and also out of our big players to be sold, I think he's the hardest one to replace, to be honest. We have other players that fit that can play in that position, but it's massive. So now we're going into the game against Villa with Longstaff, Bruno and Miley. Bruno's quite close to getting a 2-game ban. He's on 9 yellow cards. So
is he on 9 now?
He's on 9, yeah. He's got the most bookings in the league. And if you go back, I think 3 of them are probably actual tackles and 3 of them are for dissent. And I think that's just he just like embodies us as a club, like always fighting, but sometimes fighting in the wrong way. And the fatigue is obviously happening back. He's amazing. He's been fit all season, like, which is, he's not one of those players that you think would be able to withstand it. And he's not looked overly fatigued. I think he's just struggled with what he's had around him to work with. But yeah, 9 yellow cards, most of the league.
FPL's got him an 8 at the moment.
Okay.
Now, they have been known to miss ones before.
Yeah.
And that's happened this season. It happened with Jack Grealish this season, actually, where they had him on three yellow cards and he was already on four, for example.
So yellow cards in cups count?
No. So if he got put to Sunderland, if you were thinking that's another one, it won't count.
No, it's not that. I've just read about him being a booking away. If he's two bookings away, he's going to miss a game soon anyway. Like,
well, at some point, he's going to end up missing two games, yeah. Yeah, quite clearly. And with Joel Linton's absence, that's a blow. And the other thing about this Villa game is, I know you've got a nice long break up to the Fulham game, but Villa falls 3 days after Fulham. He's going to basically play the same team twice again, isn't he?
Yeah. Got no choice, really. I mean, Livramento is the only one. He was ill at the weekend, but you always knew Dan Burn was going to play after, you know, the performance and particularly him, he played well against Sunderland. So he was always going to come back in, even if you could question, you could quite obviously see the tactics that Pep was playing against us. You know, break on the transition, play your fullbacks high, which is interesting because I think it's probably what Villa are going to try and do to us again when we play him.
Lee, you think you can take advantage of this? I suppose what's interesting about it as well, you've got the best home record in the league. 2.9 points per game at home, beat everybody bar Sheffield United. A remarkable narrative. Si, you've got the second worst away record in the league. We can't just put that over the last 2 months. It's gone on all season, mate.
Yeah, it's true. I do think...
In fact, the only team you've beat away from home is Sheffield United. There you go, that's full circle.
Yeah, I think, but you can box those into different parts of the season. I almost feel like if we had a crystal ball and you could see how bad December was going to be, there are some games earlier in the season where we almost, it's not that we didn't try, we just, I know the urgency wasn't there, that was there last season.
That's like a playground excuse, so I wasn't trying.
I don't know, you'd have to watch the games to really, it's like, defensively, obviously, like making a lot more mistakes, but I do think a lot of the players, there aren't that many players that have been through this in our squad before. And that kind of experience, even like on a individual game by game basis, you look at like Man City and teams like that, they just know at different parts of the season what's required. Mm. And I don't think we had that experience at the start of the season to know like, fuck, we need to get like a lot of points on the board here. And like we get injuries from the first game. I remember like, even the Villa game, I think we picked up an injury first game of the season, and then it's been slowly a decline in availability ever since then.
What's the target now? I mean, do you look at Villa as catchable, or are they too far ahead?
Probably too far ahead now, I'd say. I think any European spot, I think that's... I'd be fine with getting a conference spot. I think the plan for the club is to not spend this January, if they can, and try get players back and push up and try and claim that seventh or potentially eighth if it works out spot. I think that'd be fine, which is why I don't think Howe's under pressure, because I think they're taking it upon themselves to say, actually, we've got the... If we get the players back, we've got the squad availability and depth to actually, you know, make up the probably 6 to 9 points after, you know, that we need to get that spot. So I don't think it's about that. I still think...
Oh, we'll certainly there. Make up to qualify for Europa. I think if you look at City, Liverpool and Arsenal was realistically uncatchable for you, then Villa's got to be the target if you were to finish top four, right? And it might be that fifth could still be enough for Champions League, but it's a fair distance to my team at the moment as well.
Yeah.
14 points behind Villa. I didn't realise it was that big. That is a lot, isn't it?
And what are we, three behind you, Lee, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's 11 to us as well, which, you know, you've got what sort of double that in games left, not even that. So it becomes a task to catch up, particularly when you've about to go away to the team that's got the best home record as well. Lee, I guess you're blessed to have the availability of rotation at the moment, right? We couldn't be so sure about your 11 against Newcastle, for example.
No, I mean, we've been without players all season, haven't we? I mean, Mings and Buendia, two of the first choice 11 from the end of last season, both been missing all season. We've seen very little of Moreno and Ramsey this season, up until very recently. We've had injury issues too, but I do think now when I look at that squad, even without Mings and Buendia, we've got strength in depth now.
I mean, you added someone like Clement Longley, which I presume you wouldn't have done if Tyrone Mings hadn't got injured, for example.
Exactly, exactly. Just that strength in depth that we've got now, to be able to bring someone like Tielemans off the bench and have someone like Duran for Watkins, who can chip in with the odd goal, It's just a real upgrade compared to what we had 12 months ago. Luca Dean and Alex Moreno, we've got two left-backs that would walk into most Premier League teams. So, that's the biggest difference, I think, compared to what we had 12 months ago, is just that strength and depth now.
To answer a Planet FPL question, I've got Leon Bailey, Suja's got Moussa Diaby. Which one of us is going to be particularly unhappy come game week 22 if we start our players?
Well, more and more over the last few weeks, Emery's been playing both, hasn't he? Which I know for a while.
I don't
while...
see that lasting now. Tielemans is back, though.
No, maybe not. It's a really tough one to call, though. Emery's one of these managers where, without making this an Emery love him, which obviously I could do for a full podcast on its own, he does seem to have a game plan for every match, and he will pick the best 11 that he thinks will win that game. He doesn't just have his first choice 11 and he rolls that 11 out every week, which is what has made picking the Villa 11 this season quite tricky, because at times he does bring Bailey into the 11. Other times he'll drop Bailey out. He'll play Cash at right back, or sometimes it'll be Konsa. And that then has repercussions on further up the pitch, whether it's the Diaby or someone different.
That said, though, if we assume you're a back four and you've got, let's say, six attacking positions, if you will, if you include the midfielders, not that I'd want to name Boubacar Kamara as one of them, but Kamara, Luiz, McGinn and Watkins,
yes,
would be a shock if they didn't start, right? For any
game
at the moment.
Those are definitely the ones where you would say.
So it's only two more spaces within Tielemans, Ramsey, Diaby, Bailey.
Bailey.
Basically. Yeah.
Tough. It is tough.
Do you see him using Diaby out wide? Because a lot of us thought that's what he'd come in as a wide player when you sign him. We haven't really seen that. So yeah. I presume to club those four other players together, Bailey's the one who naturally wants to play wide, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Bailey and Ramsey, both wide players. I mean, Ramsey was left-sided wide player, first choice for the whole of last season. Zaniolo's the other one that comes into the equation, course, that we haven't mentioned.
Told you twice in that alone space there, mate. Another one, to be honest, I think, again, if Buendia hadn't suffered his problem, you wouldn't have bothered with that either.
No, probably not. But Diaby is the one that, surprisingly, he's been wanting to play through the middle off Watkins. But then we've also seen Tielemans play that position just behind Watkins as well. So
it's not really a surprise to me, to be honest, about Diaby. I think one of the things, we were obviously every link with him last year. And I think because we play 4-3-3, and that's all we play, there were, I think, concerns about him in that wide position and tracking back, particularly when we've got Almiron and what he does there. He's the almost the complete opposite. So I think if he played out there, he'd get exposed in the Premier League and it'd become a place that, particularly with Cash behind him, that would be targeted. So that's why I like Emery. I think he's a really good manager and he just has, like you say, that flexibility, which Howe hasn't got, to be honest.
I quite like him too, so he's all right.
Are we still sticking with the narrative, Lee, that Bailey generally is probably bad news for Cash, subject to fixture? I think we have to remember that there's the few that they've played recently together, but they've been some of the easier fixtures, haven't they, with respect?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, if we've got an easy home game, it could be both of them. But if the fixture is average or a tough fixture, you wouldn't expect to see both of them in the 11. It's going to be one or the other.
I take it Ezri Konsa is the one definitive at the back, is it? Whether he plays a right-sided centre-back or right-back or not?
Yeah, and Torres when he's fit.
So Torres would definitely come back in for you. What's the latest on him?
Well, we thought he might be in and around the squad for the weekend. Emery said in his press conference, Torres is fit, he's trained, he's good, but he wasn't in the matchday squad, so I don't know whether he was playing games a little bit there.
That one's a bit concerning because he was on the bench at Manchester United, wasn't he? Which was New Year's Day. So you think, well, he leads him into the next game, and we're fast-forwarding over 2 weeks now.
Yeah, you certainly can't go and buy from an FPL point of view.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy Priceline.
Would you buy Alex Moreno?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mind.
Is that the one? Do you see him playing regularly enough? Because you know what, that, oh, is he going to play instead of Luka Dean? That's the fear, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, any sensible FPL manager is going to have a 12th man of some sort to come in. But with Moreno's high upside, I think it's worth that gamble. I do think he is the better player than Luka Dean. And I do think there's a reason why last season Emery signed one player that made it into the 11, and that was Alex Moreno. It's his man. He's brought him in. And he was really good against Burnley. Got forward loads. I don't see any reason why it won't be Moreno's position going forward.
So you want to, if you wanted to invest, you'd go in at that rather than one of the cheaper, perhaps safer ones, Torres or Konsa, for example?
Yeah, I would. I think there's the upside there to go for it.
Do you own yourself at the moment?
Nope.
What Villa assets you got?
Just Watkins.
What are we doing with him, Lee? Because there's conflicting problems here. And your cup tie at Chelsea is obviously very important from an FPL perspective, because should you lose, which you obviously don't want to do, then obviously your fixture at West Ham in game week 29 definitely goes ahead. And that would probably, I think, over the next 8 game weeks, knowing that fixture was on, I think that would probably put you top of my fixture difficulty rating, despite the fact that the clubs like Manchester City will have doubles in that period. So what do we do? Because Solanke might have a double. Tony, we now know, has got a double. There's also the suggestion that people need to use the likes of Watkins to find funds to get back to the likes of Salah or force De Bruyne in. What's the thinking here, Lee? He hasn't scored for 4. We know how consistent he is. What are you thinking?
No sweat. Nowhere near being sold for me. At 8.9 million, third highest scoring player in the game. Nah. Yeah, he hasn't scored in 4. That's fine. He'll probably score against Newcastle. Like, he doesn't go long without...
Click that, Nick. I would... Definite red card incoming now, mate.
No, but you know what I mean? Over the long term, he is just consistent. It's not just the goals. Like, he's got 11 assists this season in FPL. Like, he's got so many routes to points. He's the clear talisman. And he's only 8.9 million. He's not going to break your budget to keep him in there. So now I think he's an absolute hold.
No, but sacrifices, if people want to get all the players they want to get, even if we just look at it from that perspective and forget your Solanke, Tony, we know has got a double, Solanke might at some point. Even if it's just a case of finding funds, you could make the same case that, say, Bukayo Saka as an alternative.
I was just going to say Saka.
Might be another way
price
to find the money. But to be honest, Lee, I'm looking at selling both to find money, mate.
I'd sell Saka over Watkins.
And I agree with that. I agree with that. But if you can jump down to Jimenez, for example, the one thing with Watkins is brilliantly consistent, but how often would his point return actually hurt? Doesn't haul that often. I think probably because of the Sheffield United and Burnley games, we'd look at things like, I mean, I take game week 23 as an example. Let's say none of the big hitters are back, right? Including, say, Haaland, for example, right? Look at Watkins at Sheffield United with, say, Arsenal, Liverpool playing each other. And Captain Watkins at Sheffield United, as many of us did. Now, you're shutting your head for the benefit of those on the audio. No, you don't fancy that quite so much, do you?
No, there's a huge difference in my mind in FPL in terms of who will I captain and who do I want in my team. Watkins is nowhere near leaving my team, but equally, I'd never captain him. He's just, like you say, he doesn't very often hit double digits. He's not particularly explosive. Obviously, he'll score a hat-trick now I've said that. But I don't see him as a captaincy option, which obviously reduces his appeal from a FPL point of view if you know you're not going to captain him. But in terms of that week specifically, it is slim pickings. Man City at Brentford, if Haaland's back, that's where you're going, aren't you?
You've got a great fixture size, so maybe it'll be just steam into Alexander Isak, for example, will it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to owning him for the 5th time this season.
After previous 4 times gone, mate?
Mixed bag. He was scoring for me, but then Wilson came back, and I was like, well, there's going to be rotation here. Surely if there's one place that we've seen them rotate, it's that striker spot. And then Wilson got injured again, and he's been banging them in ever since, yeah.
Is Wilson still out, injured?
This game. He's one of the players that we're expecting back. He won't be back for Villa. It's not expected anyway. But we think Fulham and potentially definitely Luton. But at that point, I think he's going to play the last 20 minutes of games anyway.
Like you say, that's just what makes Isak hard to go to, because we saw it so many times last season where Wilson just started out of nowhere.
Realistically, how are you finding the money to and the luxury to make a move like that at the moment with the doubles of others, etc.?
I do think we might see something slightly different in the rotation of the front four, with the games being spaced out as they're probably likely to continue to be, depending on how we do in the FA Cup. I think Gordon on the right, Isak on the left, Wilson up top. You'll see more of that with Miggy getting subbed, I think, is more likely. I think if Isak's fit and it looks like his groin injury is behind him, I think he's too good that you can't mess about, and particularly with the way that we're conceding goals at the moment, you can't mess about and take him off with 20 minutes to go if we've got one game a week. So I can see him playing more on the left than Gordon and playing more on the right, to be honest, to finish the season off.
Well, that won't sound great to the people who are just thinking, come on, James, I want to captain Anthony Gordon in game week 23. And actually, why not if the big hitters aren't back? He's returning, all but one home game so far. It's Luton at home, for the record, which is the start of, I think, an attractive three-game run of Luton at home, mm-hmm. Forest away, Bournemouth at home. Although, as you correctly pointed out, you lost all the three reverse games. Then there's a trip to Arsenal. There's another good home game against Wolves after that as well, in terms of, I think, say, for Gordon, that's a good fixture. Anthony Gordon, captain 23, sir?
It depends what you want from your captain pick. If you're just trying to avoid a blank and you're looking for the low floor potential ceiling, then yeah, I think I'd back him to get at least 5-6 points in that game.
Would you fancy him to do so quite so much if he was to move to the right?
I think you've seen his best goals for us have either been running in at the back post from crosses that have come in from the right, or cutting inside and finishing with his right foot. So I think it depletes that aspect of it. But he's a really good footballer, and he's smart enough that I think he'd still create opportunities, and has created opportunities when he's played out there. It's just obviously not his best position. I think when you've got the strength of depth that we've got, if in this scenario Wilson comes back, I think Jacob Murphy is potentially close, but with shoulder injuries, that could just go at any point. That's the only one. I think the fitness of Murphy actually might be kind of almost more key to Gordon. If Murphy's there, then it's Gordon, Isak on the left, potentially with Wilson up top, and Murphy will play minutes if he's back fit again.
Harvey Barnes close or not?
No, he's not. Everyone keeps... it's been described as a bit of an NFL injury. So this toe injury that he's got, it's the bone underneath his toe, which is quite delicate, and it's really hard to do any like rehab on it. So it's just a case of, I think he just goes for scans and sees whether it's healed or not. And it's just not to this point. So I think even if he's, you know, you see pictures of him in the training ground, I think it might be, I think his match fitness must be like some way off. So I don't know. I'm not expecting to see Harvey Barnes back at any point soon.
Okay. What Newcastle you got at the moment, sir?
Newcastle, I have Livermento and Gordon and no Isak. I have the same amount of Villa players.
I'll take it Gordon's a hold through this period, yeah?
Oh yeah, I've gotten him very early. So I think value wise isn't anyone at $5.5 million that I would consider sending.
And to go back to the point, Lee, about, let's say, Watkins and Saka and stuff like that, if you're sitting there and you've got the value built up in the likes of Palmer and Gordon, for example, like, they're so easy holds, aren't they? Versus you can funnel the money off of Watkins. What's your Livramento plan, Si? Because I'll take it from what you're saying, you're not expecting him to go back into the team automatically.
No, he's been on my bench. I've just had other
fires,
kind of priority transfers and fires, yeah. But I have got Moreno. I got him I just checked, actually. I got him in game week 18. Just randomly. I think that was when I saw Digne went down with a hamstring injury or something. I can't know. He played like the next game after that and then got injured. So I'm like, he should have scored last weekend. So he's definitely my third defender. And since I've had him in, I've not really been tempted to even start Livermento. But probably could do with this point that he didn't get against City coming off the bench. I don't think I want to put 11 out this game week.
Trips, what would you advise people here? Because again, he's so, another one that you can use to find money, right? You could move Trips to Botman, even, right? And you're putting $2 million in the bank or so, right?
So prior to the Joel Linton news, so I've currently ranked like over 2 million at the moment. I'm like absolutely gagging to use my wild card. I need you to tell me to hold off, because like when I saw this, well, basically my plan was to use it for this Luton game and go back in onto Free Newcastle and go in on Trippier. I've not owned him all season. I just think with this Joel Linton injury and what we've got in midfield, it's put me off that strategy. So now I think I'm just going to end up falling into what everyone else does.
I'm going to say about a game with 23 wild
You're
card.
Going to say wait until at least the FA Cup fifth round draw is announced.
No, I'm going to say play it your way, mate.
Oh my god! Play it my way. Jesus.
Listen. In terms of 23, you've got information, right? You got information from the FA Cup fourth round. You got the fifth round draw. You know it was in the Carabao Cup final. Actually, wait until the kind of week where 22 is obviously midweek fixtures towards the weekend of 23. You might even get announcement of something, perhaps Liverpool v Luton, which you may not get prior to the 22 deadline, for example. So, yeah, if you want to set it up really nice for 25, know that you're going to manage through 26. You'll have an understanding clearer than it looks at the moment in terms of what 29 would look like. Then... sure, and if you yourselves ended up playing at 29 away at Crystal Palace, then again, long-term, looks like a good run of fixtures for Newcastle. With someone like Trips, anyway, you're so worried about the fixtures. It's any time, isn't it? You might debate whether you play him at Arsenal, for example, but other than that, you play him in every game, wouldn't you?
Yeah, he's looked good the last couple of games. Back to his kind of attacking best. So I think if you're not looking to play it safe and consolidate your rank, if you've got mini leagues or you're like me where you're having a bit of a shit season, I think he's potentially one to go in on rather than sell. That's kind of where I'm at with Trips. I would like to get him in. The only caveat is that Joel Linton injury and who we can get back in that midfield. I think potentially derailed our season, actually. It was looking like we were going to get a couple of players back and have a bit of a charge towards the end of the season, maybe get one or two loan signings or signings in January, but doesn't look like that's happening either.
Over this 7-game run that you've had with the one win against Fulham, how many FPL points Trips has got over those 7 games? Bearing in mind, he started 5 of them.
10?
4
points. Oh my god, yeah, well, that's how many goals we conceded. Yeah,
yeah, that's got a lot to do with it, but there's no attacking returns over those 5.
True.
Some particularly like the Everton Tottenham games, I think his performances were questionable, right?
I think he's over that. I think it was not saying something he's not. In his private life. And I honestly think...
Don't get onto internet rumours here, Si. This is a family show.
If we'd have played anyone except for Man City the weekend, we're winning that game. I think on the back of Sunderland, and even the way we played in that game, which is why I'm still somewhat confident about the run and about even the game against Villa, I think we can get something out of.
Would you beat Villa if you played them at the weekend?
Last weekend, at home? Yeah, beat them 5-1. Probably.
I was going to say on Trippier, is he undroppable? Because from an outsider's point of view, some of the performances, it's not been good, has it, at all this season defensively? Like, he does look liable.
If Si's saying he's over that, then he probably is, isn't he? He's El Capitan, isn't he? So,
yeah. No, I think he's that. He went through a bit of a rough patch. I do think there was clearly, like, it started from when he withdrew from the England England camp. And that was the catalyst for it. And I think now something's changed. You saw the picture of him and his wife looking all happy at New Year's Eve. And he's played well since then. So, yeah. No, Trippier is not a concern. I'd say his ownership's still very high, though. It's still 38%. I don't know what that is among elite managers, and I think that's probably where you can make a decision based on where you are and what you want to achieve this season. But for me, it feels like a potential route to points that other people will be ignoring in and around my
I think as well
table.
Now, I certainly I think those who don't own, like me, will probably be ignoring. Have you got, Lee?
Yeah, yeah. So you that have. Gives you some indication what you of what elite managers are doing.
Yeah, what's your rank?
Higher than you.
Oh, shit as well. Okay, cool.
I don't know, actually. Let me have a look.
No, please don't. What's your plan with trips?
I think hold. I mean, I've held through Liverpool and Man City. It doesn't feel like now's the right time to sell, looking at the fixtures coming up. He's proven year after year that he's a great FPL asset. I haven't done a lot of planning for the doubles and stuff, so that might impact my thinking, but purely from a, is Trippier a good FPL asset? Does he have good fixtures? Is he good value for money point of view? Yeah, no issues.
Anyway, more importantly, I'm 50k behind you. The game week's not finished yet, and I'll have you as the season goes on, mate. And then I'll be blocking you off my spreadsheet planner and stuff. Yeah, I think he's going to be a difficult one to buy, Si. Like, if you wild card, great. Yeah, you're taking advantage of something that people else can't do. I get that completely. I think for people like me, it's probably going to be ignore because priorities will lie in different areas. And I'm going to use more money that I need to use somewhere else. It'd be a tough sell for people, though. And obviously, that's going to apply to Watkins, no doubt, as well. They absolutely no doubt about that. Before we finish, guys, we did say we'd cover off a little bit of FFP, which I want to do specifically with you two. It's obviously very much in the news because of what's happened with Forest, Everton. And I did kind of allude to it at the start. You two almost feel like the closest to breaking the unbreakable ceiling, which, Si, you did last year, and Lee, you're doing this year. Lee, to you first, is there a restriction on Villa on FFP going forward over, say, the next couple of transfer windows? And how do you feel about it generally? I should clarify, PSR, Profit Sustainability Report. I can't help but say FFP.
Yeah, so my understanding is yes, we are going to see, we are going to be up against it as we sort of annualise the Jack Grealish 100 million no longer being in our sort of 3-year window. So it is going to become more challenging. And that probably explains some of our activity at the end of the summer where we were getting rid of some promising young players in Cameron Archer, Philogene Verdace, etc.
It's not just Chelsea then. Someone outside the cartel was also getting 100% pure profit for young players. Is that correct? Not I'm defending Chelsea here, by the way, to clarify.
No, this is it. So yeah, I think we are going to be up against it potentially. But equally, if we can get that top four, that brings in the revenue, doesn't it? And that'll ease issues. The other one is we've got some big earners who aren't in the first 11. You Coutinho, Luca Dean are apparently two of our biggest earners. And
Coutinho's off the books now, is he, or is it just a loan?
It was only a loan, so okay. Yeah, he's going to be coming back at some point. So yeah, hopefully we can shift him.
But the problem you have, Lee, which is what we've had this season and why the system is fundamentally broken, is like, so we qualified for the Champions League last year. We can't sign anyone based off the Champions League income in January. It's not in the current 3-year cycle.
Because it doesn't happen until the summer, is that right? So you'll be able to spend this coming summer.
It won't go obviously until on their accounts for this season, 23-24, right? So this is a conversation then for next January, basically.
At which point,
or the summer, maybe.
It's just the system is, you asked for an opinion, the system is fundamentally broken at both ends. I think it stops clubs that punch above their weight, like we did, but get to a place where you're in competitions where you can generate more financial income, but it's not sustainable because you can't then invest in that same cycle. So we're now going to have to go through a period where because we didn't have the revenue in place, because we're going to go through a cycle now where we're going to have to drop out of that level, probably hopefully go down to a lesser European level, and then reinvest the money that we got from last season, and then hopefully try and go again. I just find it incredible that all these blockages have been and things have been put in place to stop spending money, but like the league had no issue with the fact that on the flip side that, you know, Mike Ashley in our previous regime was just running us financially into the ground in terms of like revenue opportunities. So we're slightly
I completely get why nearly all Newcastle fans obviously despise Mike Ashley, and I'm not defending it, but in terms of running you in the ground, you weren't actually weren't financially unstable.
No, I'll rephrase that, but that was because we weren't making any money and we weren't spending any money.
And actually, ironically, because you had a lot in the bank, actually it did allow some of the signings when these guys first took over the club, right?
Yeah, it did. But then within that 3-year period, we're now into the position where, like, revenue wise, we're just, even though we're up, I think it was 37% the last 2 years, it's still just nowhere near enough to be able to sustain like spending. So it's frustrating. I think there should be potentially, you know, some things looked at, like, for example, the ability to spend money on homegrown players. I think there's a good case in point, actually, is Calvin Phillips deal. Like, we can't do it for the money that Man City are asking, not because we don't have the money, because of the way it appears in the books. So why not have a different rule set place for the ability to sign homegrown players and that not count, when if you can prove that actually you've got the financial capability to sustain it? So, you know, it's we're the richest club in the world, but we can't spend any money. So there seems to be like, I don't know, it just, the system is kind of like clearly in place to help teams that are already at that financial level continue to compete at that level. It punishes teams that are coming up and trying to kind of establish themselves in the league or punch above that way. And it's punishing teams like Newcastle and Villa, who are in European competitions but are going to suffer for it, like, squad-wise. So,
is that how you feel, Lee?
Yeah, I agree. And I think the funny thing is, I feel like football fans in general were sort of missold FFP when it first came in, because it was around the time when sort of the whole Chelsea had been taken over and spent loads of money, and Man City were just getting taken over, I think, and were looking like they were going to be the next team that just buys the league. And I feel like at the time it was sort of sold into football fans as, look, we don't want these teams that just come along with loads of money and storm into the top six. Whereas actually it has stopped that, but equally and more importantly, it's maintaining that top six that a team like Liverpool, Man United, Arsenal, they're never going to drop down in terms of those revenues, because they've already got that global fan base. They've got that revenue that comes in every year. So they're always going to be able to spend more than an up-and-coming team who wants to try and break into the top 10, even, like a Brighton or a Bournemouth. They're never going to stand a chance of competing with a Man United when they've got those sort of revenues coming in and the ability to spend in the transfer window.
You're both competing with Manchester United now.
Yeah, but...
in what sense?
Well, I mean, for a start, both of you both have better teams than Manchester United.
Yeah, but isn't that more because Man United have spent the money so badly, the fans...
Yeah, but we're gonna have to sell realistically. We've got two choices as a club. Newcastle is one. So you spend money on players to improve your team, which gets you to a position where you then have to sell those same players if you want to then reinvest in the squad to get back to the same position. So realistically, I know there's a lot of talk in the press, but we're probably gonna have to sell, or potentially either sell. Bruno
Guimarães is the name that keeps getting mentioned, isn't it?
Bruno's the name, and it's one that makes most sense. And, you know, if it happens and he goes for 100 million, then that gives us the ability to send to buy PSG, exactly. Yeah, potentially.
Poor bastards, give him another 100 million, they ain't got enough.
You know, that's great. But
they're looking
really
at
it
behind the walls and going, we don't even need this money.
At least they can spend that money.
It's like, here's a tenner for Bruno Guimarães.
Is that really like how it should work? Like, you buy
no,
your
I
team
think,
and then have to sell the same players because they've done well, or we just do nothing and wait until the Champions League and Adidas money kicks in 18 months' time.
Yeah, I'm not going to throw too much opinion on this because we did a podcast on it on Tuesday,
check it
which
out.
I recommend people listen to. Yeah, which neither of these two clowns have listened to yet. So I don't know if they do or they don't know my opinion. But one of the things I did say on there. Is that I think a lot of opinion on it will be massively influenced by the club that you support. So if you're a Newcastle fan, you feel like you're being denied, right? If you're a Villa fan, you probably feel like, hey, it's hard to push through it. Although, you know, you've got a good chance here, Lee, in my opinion. And I think you both do, Si. Because the reality is as well, Si, you definitely will break through it.
Oh, we will.
No
eventually.
Doubt, mate. It just eventually, might take a little bit longer.
And I'm fine with that. To be honest, it's more, I'm just tired of like the discourse of it. And it's too much now. Like the constant talking about the fact we have to sell players and what's the transfer budget and all of that stuff. I'm like quite happy to just, you know, almost write the season off, but put it down to like lessons learned. I don't want to see us like sell the players that I've really enjoyed watching for the last two or three years. But I don't know. What's your opinion on it as a Spurs fan? You seems to be something that isn't talked about that much. Predominantly, I guess,
did a podcast on Tuesday. All I would say is, in relation to your two clubs, I would say, in fairness, and you could do a whole podcast debating this, but I think we support three clubs who are similar in terms of size and stature, right? History, everything, right? There's comparisons between the three of us. My club has been bashed a lot by its own fan base for the last 15 years of acting quite sensibly, and yet has managed to compete with the rest of this cartel by not pissing money up the wall and being sensible. And you know what? It's faced the criticisms of when we were close to win the title and then we didn't buy a player for a year or two because we were building a new stadium and stuff. So, and a smaller scale of that, as I explained, is like your Brighton and Brentford models who have come through and are well run, etc. And, you know, Brighton is kind of like the copycat model for even some of the big clubs at the moment in terms of how they want to operate. So the idea that it can't be broke through, particularly in your case, Si, when it's an absolute certainty that you will do, it's just probably going to take a lot longer. My team got in the Champions League in 2010, right? It was another 6 years before we did it again. And then we did it again. And then we did it again. And I'm not saying it will take 6 years for you to do it again, but it might be that, yeah, you get in once. Okay. You've had to dip out. You'll be close, close, close and get there.
You see, and you say it's an absolute certainty. Sorry.
It is, mate.
But like you've got to remember the who's invested in our club is an investment firm. And you know, they bought the club under certain conditions and market conditions, and every year, and with the changing of these FFP and whatever you want to call it now, those market conditions change. And if that means they're in a position where they don't think they're going to get a return on investment within whatever it is that they've deemed, or, you know, the cycle for that investment, you know, maybe they do look to exit the club, in which case I think that's pretty much what the Premier League and all of those other cartels want.
If they exit the club, you know that 99% of the country is not going to have any sympathy with that.
No, they're not.
And I get the mixed views from Newcastle fans on that. But most people be like, yeah, great, go then. So yeah, if that happens, then of course you won't make it.
That's fine. But I know there's the outside politics and everything that comes with Saudi Arabia, but there is nothing that they've done in terms of my club that would make me want to. For them to think they're not good
custodians
of my football club. And if the reason that they decide that they don't want to be or can't be is because of the rules that have been put in place since they invested in the club, then for me, that's wrong. I you can argue about Saudi Arabian influence and investment all you like, but if you look at how other clubs and in different levels of football, you know, the investment and the ownership structure and everything that's gone into it, you know, I think they're trying to do it the right way and almost getting punished for it at this moment in time.
No, I get that. If we treat it that way, I completely agree with it. And unlike Lee's team, you know, at least you never game the system in the EFL by selling your stadium to circumnavigate rules in the EFL. Isn't that right, Lee?
Needs must.
Needs
hate the player, hate the game.
Listen, all I got to say is thank God for you. You beat Derby County that day, mate. It's as simple as that. Yeah.
Great.
Guys, good chat. The FFP stuff will rumble on. I think we can come back to it with both of you. Very best of luck for what's coming up in game week 22. And I guess your next fixtures, which are FA Cup fourth round games. Lee, will you beat Chelsea?
We've won the last two times at Stamford Bridge, but we are notoriously bad away from home. So it's a tough one. I'm not sure we will, actually. I'm not that confident.
So will you beat Fulham?
Yes, I think we will. Honestly, I think part of it might depend on. So they've got their second round League Cup semi final.
Yeah, 3 days earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's going to have a big impact on it psychologically and obviously everything else that goes into it. So depending on how it do, but I'm pretty confident now that we're essentially only playing for like one trophy that we can have a good run at this season.
Would that become for the fans the priority now? The FA Cup, rather than what you do in the league.
Oh God, it's hard to say because there's so much conversation that swirls around like money now, and that obviously the FA Cup isn't really going to make a dent in that
and
respect.
I'm just thinking longer term here, but let's say you get to the semi final, right, and you've got a rearranged game in the league afterwards, and you might be fighting for the sixth spot or something. Are the fans after because of what's happened going to be like just God's sakes, rest players in other competitions, make sure they're right for the cup semi. Could it be like that?
But potentially, but I think we also know that Hal's not going to do that. He's going to pick his best team. And the one thing we haven't talked about...
You
is
may also medical... have half your squad back by then.
One thing we haven't talked about, and no one really knows, is what's going on with our medical department, because our head of physiotherapy has gone on extended maternity leave. And
you
could question some of the players that have returned and picked up other injuries. I think Hal just trusts his team, and that extends his medical team, and he's been given information, much like a lot of managers are, that players are good to go.
Is that like the Sven Botman next week?
Yeah. Oh, well, Hal is a bullshitter. We know that. And he goes well out of his way to avoid giving even like the slightest advantage to opponents or anyone. But I also do think that he's quite straight in terms of, like, that's probably the information he's been given. And yeah, it wouldn't be surprised me if we, when the club reviews this season, if the medical department is, I assume, is an area we can invest in that doesn't count towards our financial fair play.
Staff wages? I don't know. Probably.
Fuck. I don't know.
Sorry, mate. It might do.
Yeah. So maybe I might just need to get a degree in physiotherapy and go work for them and do it for free. Maybe we can sign a new player. But no, I think just going back to the original question, yeah, I think we'll. You know, by far the easiest draw in terms of size and scale and difficulty of opponent we've had all season.
Click that as well.
City. We've had this season.
It's actually true, unbelievably.
PSG, yeah. Dortmund, Milan, Man City, Manchester United, and Sunderland away have been our cup games this season. So,
yeah, I Sunderland was tough, wasn't it?
I mean, in terms of occasion, like there were, you know, it was. The squad we had available and stuff, it was. And within 2 minutes of the game, it was like, oh, this is going to be an absolute piss walk.
Yeah.
It's the most fun I've had all season, to be honest. But leading up to the game, it wasn't. And you look at everything we talked about schedule-wise and stuff, it was potential banana skin. But no. I think we'll get a few players back. We'll finish the season strong and then not sell anyone, probably not sign anyone in January and see what happens and then just go again, reset, go again next summer.
Lee, you got it if you don't make top four now.
Oh, yeah. I'm gutted if we don't win the league now.
How many are you going to beat Newcastle by then?
Same as last time, I reckon. 3-0.
Nico's going to have some fun with this one, I'm certain. So, prediction for Villa?
2-2. I think we'll be winning the game and we'll let in another goal in the last 5 minutes, like we seem to do a lot this season. Joel in and out is a big miss. I think I think we could have actually gone there and surprised you and maybe got the 3 points, but I think that's potentially a step too far.
Do you remember what I said on our Patreon pod late in the morning you played Sheffield United?
You said it'll be typical that this is exactly the sort of game where you'd look at the form book and go, it's a Villa win, but it's a banana skin. And actually, it'd be typical if Sheffield United get something from it.
Classic Barclays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you look at your home record and I look at Si's home away record, then there can only be one result, can't there? I have a sneaky that they might get something. But I also think the Fulham game gives them, they've got an extra day break on you. So it's a 3-day turnaround again. If players aren't back, that's problematic. But the biggest one, I really think that Joel Linton loss is massive for you, just generally, not just for Villa, but upcoming games as well. But at least after this, the spacing gets better. And I don't doubt that you will rise up. So you won't finish where you are in the league. I'm certain of that. You'll finish higher. Gents, pleasure. Thank you both so much. Lee, anything you want to plug before you go, like further Villa FFP reading or any jazz like that? Or...
No, if anyone hasn't seen, they go and check out our new crest that's been leaked on Twitter. It's fucking horrible.
You like it?
No.
Okay, why are you telling people to check it out then?
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. And Si, anything you want to plug, mate?
Yeah, just those. I don't know if you've seen those leaked photos of them. Well, not leaked. I think there was a 442.
This isn't the ones in the hotel football that you said you wouldn't talk about, is it?
No, it's... No, it's all the current Newcastle guys in retro Adidas Newcastle kits. Just, oh, God, it looks so good. I'm just
buzzing for next season. So if you want to spend any time on Twitter or X, I wouldn't recommend it. But if you do, go find some of those. Go find that photo shoot. Incredible.
If you can spare it, guys, don't forget to buy your retro Newcastle tracksuit so you can help them out with FFP. Blinding stuff. Thank you both so much, guys. I'll be streaming tomorrow, scheduled for 12 o'clock. Come and ask me jazz on FPL or FFP, PSR or any of that stuff. We have, as said, got two more COTCs for you before Game Week 22. Nottingham Forest, yeah, them still PSR against Arsenal with Mark Southerns and Adam Pritchard on Monday. And then we've got Wolves and Manchester United for you with Bradley Park and Gary Robinson for you next Thursday. Just leave me to say thanks again so much to Lee and Si. Good luck, gents. Cue music, please. Manchild.
Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.